Hello, everyone. Welcome to Buzzer Beaters. I am Eddie Aparicio, and this is my co-host, Anthony Tuan Corral. And we're here to talk about basketball, man.
Basketball.
Now, we normally talk about NBA, and we're going to talk about NBA today because Team USA is playing in the Olympics, if you guys haven't figured that out yet. But I'm sure everybody's watching this because it's actually a pretty competitive Olympic teams out there right now. But we're here going to go live. We've been doing this live for the last couple episodes. We're now to move now to Wednesday, though. We're now Wednesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. And we are here live so that we can take your questions. Now, we recognize that the NBA season is pretty much done, but Team USA is here. We are actually going to talk about Team USA only today for the entire time, right? We might take up an hour. We might take a little bit more. But we have a lot of content to go over with you today. And again, you know, the Team USA team has played a total of 9 games, right? They had 5 exhibition games. They had 4 Olympic games. The last game was just a couple days ago against Brazil. And now they moved on to the semifinals against Serbia, which is going to be taking place on Thursday. And whoever wins that is going to go ahead and play for the gold against the winner of, I think it was France and Germany. Yeah, France and Germany. So if Team USA wins on Thursday, they're going to play the winner of France and Germany. And if they lose, which, you know, we think they're not, but you never know what can happen, right? But if they lose, they'd be playing for bronze against the loser of France and Germany on Saturday. So,
and also, if I'm not mistaken, I think Germany put a pretty good butt whooping to France the first time they played.
That's amazing, man. You know, yeah. And I know that the Germany played the U.S. pretty well too. I think it was the second or third game that they played in the exhibition series, and it was close. It was probably the closest game that Team USA has dealt with. But I think Team USA was kind of going through some, you know, feeling out process, right? Steve Kerr has this really stacked team, right? And, you know, these are all really good players. And, of course, there were some changes. Grant Hill made that controversial change with substituting Derek White for Kawhi Leonard. And, of course, we know that Jaylen Brown was kind of hurt by that a little bit or pissed off. He thought he should have been on there because, you know, he got the MVP of the series in the finals. But, you know, now as you kind of look back and see that decision, man, I understand why Derek White is part of that squad. I mean, that is a serious difference maker, but it won't show up in the stats, right? We're going to go ahead and talk about the game observations. I mean, that's primarily what we're going to talk about first. Yep. Is we're going to talk about some of the general observations that we've seen in these first 9 games of Team USA in the Olympics. So I kind of opened it up a little bit there, Tuan, that, you know, we started off with Team Canada and then we ended off with Team Brazil, you know, with 7 games in between there, right? There's a total of 9 games. So I want to go ahead and ask you what your opinions are with respect to what you saw, what you observed, what things stood out, what are things that you're kind of like finding concerning, you know, anything that stands out. It's a total open conversation. And then, you know, we'll delve into the details after that. So,
So thanks. So my focus and most of what I watch were the actual Olympic games, right? So the South Sudan game, the Serbia
game. That was a good game, man.
South Sudan is, they're a comer, man. Like, and you know, I believe they've only been an independent country since 2011. And you know, they're just recently building this squad. I mean, there's a lot of, they're an impressive team. I'll put it to you that way.
Very athletic, man. Just very athletic. Oh, like total, like positionless basketball right there.
Correct. Athletic, doesn't back down, you know, like a lot of that stuff. Yeah. So I watched that game. I watched the Brazil game. I watched the Puerto Rico game, you know, all very exciting. But, you know, some of the observations that I've had, you know, is I've really kind of put the players into 3 categories. There's the players that have surprised me. There's the players that are doing what I thought they would do. And then there's the bucket of the players, for whatever reason, are less impressive or more in the background, you know, just more of a gray tone.
Just there for the ride, right? They're just there for the ride, just kind of waiting for the game to come to them.
Was that?
Just waiting for the game to come to them. They're just there for the ride right now. They're not asserting themselves as much.
Correct. Yeah. And so I wanted to kind of start with the players that impressed me. And, you know, the first player I'm going to start with is a player, Eddie, that you've been touting forever. And I've been like, he's okay. He's okay. He gets hurt all the time. And that's Anthony Davis.
That dude is a beast.
That dude is a monster, Eddie. Like,
he is. He is. And, you know, and just to bring full circle, we had a podcast that just was released last week. It was a repeat of something that we had talked about, but it wasn't marketed that way. And we asked our producers to go ahead and launch it. But we talked about the most overrated players of all time. And I actually had Anthony Davis in there, but I kind of wanted to classify him differently. Not overrated, but probably the most disappointing because he has the most talent that I've seen in a long time to be one of the best at his position. And when he's healthy, he's one of the best positions. So go for it, man.
He does. I mean, he plays at all levels, can play every aspect of the game. His defense, you know, is much more pronounced than I had given him credit for. I mean, I just think he is fitting into this team like a T, like perfectly. The other guy that has really impressed me is Bam Adebayo. I don't watch a lot of Heat games, but you know that guy is another one. You know, he's not as tall as Anthony Davis, but his presence is big. You know, he moves really well. He brings the ball up at times. You know, and he does it very smoothly. I really like Bam Adebayo. So that's two. The other one that's impressed me, but is also like so insanely cocky is Anthony Edwards. That dude.
Oh, man. But he's good cocky, though. He's not trying to piss you off. He's just kind of going, I'm better than you, and I know it, but I'm going to show you just through my game. And he talks a little bit, right? But he's not. I mean, he's one of these guys that at the playground frustrates the hell out of you because you know he's second good, and he's hella cocky. He's not going to throw it in your face, right? Like, you know, we play with guys in the past in our past lives, right? Where people, you know, one of the things you know I hate is freaking someone who chirps, man. Right? You saw me one time and get pissed off about that, right?
We can talk about that one time, but yeah. But Anthony Edwards is hilarious because he's playing with the elite of the elite. And at times, he's playing as though he's the only one on the team. Like, I'm open. I'm going to shoot. I'm going to go here. I'm going to take mine. I'm going to do mine. That dude, I'm telling you right now, he's either going to be one of the greatest basketball players in the history of the NBA, or he's going to fail miserably at it. I mean, it's going to be like, I could just be based on his attitude, his personality. And right now, I mean, he plays defense exceptionally well.
No, he does. And that's the part of his game that he's actually developed greatly because he wasn't like that when he first came out.
I agree.
Not at all.
Yep. Nope. And I really like his shot. And again, not comparing him, but his shot reminds me of Jordan's shot. Just a very kind of vertical elbow, very smooth. Every time he lets it go, you're like, dude, that's going to go in. It doesn't – I mean, it goes in, you know, about 50-50 or probably less, not as often, but it looks pretty.
He's actually being compared the most to Jordan. I mean, not because of his style of play, but just because how dominant he can be, man.
Yeah.
And if he puts his mind to it, he could be very dominant. And the thing is that, you know, you're saying you're predicting him as possibly one of the best that we have ever seen, as long as he puts the work in, man, as long as he just doesn't get lazy and says, I'm good enough as I am right now, because the greats, man, they work at their game, man. There's a reason why they're great, right? I mean, Kobe Bryant was the epitome of it. Jordan was another one. You got Steph Curry, whose workouts are legendary, right? As long as he does that, he's going to be.
I agree. Time will tell on that. But what also will tell is I'll throw it out there. I mean, I cannot see that guy not winning at least one NBA championship, right? Like, I can see that in his future. The question is, what does he do once he's won, right? Like, what happens after you've reached the plateau? That's where his work ethic, I think, is really going to have to take the next level, kind of. The other guy.
Well, I was going to say, you see him as the face of the NBA? Because that's another podcast we just released this week as well.
Every time I see this guy, he just – again, he's the right level of cocky. Sometimes a little too cocky, but I don't mean that in a negative way. I just mean, like, dude, you got, you know, Durant to your right. You got, you know, Anthony Davis to your left. Give up the ball, dude. Like, you're not – it's not just you out there, you know? And I don't want to say he's a black hole because he's not a black hole, but there's –
He's not.
There's times when, you know, he's feeling it, like, it's about me. It's about me. It's about
me.
Hold on, bro.
Yeah. Real quick, because we have some listeners here right now. Hey, thanks for being on here. But we're here live, and we're live for a reason, because we want to hear from you, right? So if there's any questions or commentary that you want to talk about with respect to Team USA or anything else that's basketball related, of course, please go ahead and enter a comment. Anyway, go ahead. So you mentioned Anthony Davis, Anthony Edwards, and there's no and there's no surprise, man. You're mentioning Anthony's because you're the Anthony here. Man. You're mentioning two Anthony's in a row, right?
You know what?
Anthony, hey, we all know, man. You're an Anthony, bro, and you love Anthony, right? So go ahead.
I didn't think about that. The other guy that's he's very limited, but you know the minutes that he had, I think he's made the most out of, and that's Halliburton, right? Tyrese Halliburton.
Yeah.
I think he's made the most of him. Obviously, he's the 12th man on the bench. He's the guy that's coming in, but
you know,
I don't want to say, I don't want to say like he's impressed me, but he's held his own, right? Like, and he's a young guy.
The minutes he's playing is what you're saying, that he's actually doing okay with his minutes that he's playing.
Correct.
What's interesting, bro, is that I broke every game down, and up for the audience who's listening right now, we actually have a breakdown of every freaking game that we have there from a statistical standpoint, from a fantasy standpoint, and I rank every player for every game, and I actually accumulated all the points, and I can show you who's been the best and who's been the worst. So go ahead. Yeah. That's coming.
All right. The next two is a set of guards. One I won't talk about too much because I've already talked about him a lot in the past, Jrue Holiday. Obviously, I think he's fantastic. He plays all aspects of the game. I think he's doing great. He's doing
amazing.
I'm as impressed with him now as I have been in the past. The other guy is Derek White. Like, that dude, you know, I don't know statistically where he's at. I'm talking about purely the eye test watching that guy. That dude is on everything. He blocks shots a lot better than I remember him doing. He's just very long, but he doesn't look it. He's very quick, but he's not fast. You know, like he just does everything very well. And he's a perfect glue guy for this team because he doesn't call out attention. Whatever you need, I'm going to do it. He just fits in the cracks and does exactly what they need him to do.
Big time glue guy, man. He's not even trying to shoot, man. He's not even looking for a shot. He's doing whatever it needs to be done in order to win. Set the right screen, block the shots, play, you know, 90 feet worth of defense, right? He's been doing that too.
Correct.
You know, it's no surprise, man, that the Celtics are the NBA champs. When they have, I mean, Jrue Holiday was the missing
piece.
The backcourt is ridiculous, man. I mean, you know, we talked about this earlier, the San Antonio Spurs, they had both Deontay Murray and Derek White, you know, years ago. They got drafted in back-to-back years with the 29th pick, man. If they actually had a Victor Wembanyama with that team at that time, man, they would have been freaking dangerous, right?
They'd be scary. Because
Deontay Murray has a similar game, not exactly to Jrue, but you know, he's a little bit more offensive oriented than Jrue, but Drew's a defensive beast. He's underrated. At least he was prior as one of the most underrated defensive guys. But the secret's out, man. That guy is a defensive beast, and everybody knows it now. He's probably considered the best defensive guard in the league. And then number two is probably Derek White.
Yeah. I agree. All right. So those were the guys that kind of jumped out at me that I thought, hey, these guys really, really are impressive. Then I'm gonna go with the guys that are doing what I expected them to do.
Okay.
There's really only two guys. There's Kevin Durant and LeBron James. They're both doing what I thought they would do. You know, Durant is Durant. LeBron is LeBron. LeBron is running the offense. He's doing what he needs to. He's muscling up when he has to. Durant had a hot game. I think it was against South Sudan. You know, where he was like carrying them on her back for a while.
Yep.
Durant. You know, he can get a shot whenever he wants. So those guys did, you know, everything that I thought they would. And then, go ahead. You guys.
No, I was going to tell you, man, is that I am impressed, super impressed about how well LeBron James is playing, man. I am super impressed at how well that guy's playing. And we have a podcast about him being not in the top five of all time, right? He was on mine, but not on yours. You know, and for those listening, go back to that podcast and you'll hear Twan's take as to why he thinks LeBron shouldn't be. But, man, after seeing him play right now, man, you're probably going, man, this guy is hella good.
No, you know, good point, Eddie. I'll eat a little humble pie. You know, my concern on a big stage of the greatest of the greatest was that LeBron James would demand too much time or too much ball. And he's not doing that right now. He's fitting in,
right,
and helping where he can. Now, is that due to his age and him reserving his energy for when he needs it? Is it due to his demeanor? I don't know, but I agree with you. He's, you know, but he's doing everything. You know, he's, you know, a lot of people consider him the greatest ever. And oh, come on,
we got a question. Life of Agony. Hey, thanks for chiming in. Who's better, LeBron or MJ?
It's interesting
because we have a podcast that talks about that. But we can go ahead and give you a sneak peek, Life of Agony. Thanks for chiming in. To me, MJ is hard to beat. There is no way you can beat that guy as the best of all time.
Yeah.
You know, LeBron is in the conversation, but there's nobody who does it as well as MJ from both the offensive and defensive standpoint, right? The one difference between that I would see between LeBron and Jordan is Jordan had that killer instinct. He would not want to lose. He would take the team on his back and just push these guys to win, right? LeBron does it differently. He does it through his play. He doesn't, you know, you talked about this undertow of kind of like the way he kind of wants to manage a team. He's not an in-your-face guy. He kind of does, you know, all the, you know, periphery kind of things that kind of get his point across and may piss people off. But Jordan, I mean, he's an unbelievable defensive player. He was as good defensively as he was offensively. And LeBron, he's really good offensively because of his passing prowess. But defensively, he was really good at that early in his career. But right now, he doesn't do it as much. So I would say MJ is still number one, in my opinion, like Magny. So thanks for the question.
Yeah.
What about you? What's your take?
I know I would agree. Jordan's won a defensive player of the year and an MVP. And LeBron's never won a defensive player of the year. And so my question would be, it's MJ, and then I could argue, you know, LeBron or Kareem.
Kareem.
LeBron or Kobe. LeBron. Yep. I could have those conversations. I think those, but yeah, you're right. It's MJ. And then from there on out. Anyway, so those were the two players that I thought did what I thought they were going to do. Then we're going to go with what I call kind of the players that are either disappearing, fading in the background, not. And I'll start with Devin Booker. I mean, he's doing okay. He's had a couple of good statistical games, but he's just kind of faded. He's waiting for things to happen, things to come to him. You know, he's just okay. Like, I mean, you know, that's the way that I'm seeing him. I'm not seeing anything like aggressive. He's not bringing it to anyone. He's just playing okay.
But you know what? Real quick, let me interject real quick, Antoine. Let me tell you just a general comment about this team, right? I think that Steve Kerr, you know, he's gone through a lot of machinations of lineup changes, and there's a lot of egos on this team that I think got a little bruised, in my opinion, early on. You know, you probably saw a little bit of that with Jason Tatum not playing. You know, Tyrese Halliburton's kind of role has been diminished a little bit. You know, it's just that, you know, Steve Kerr says when you have 40 minutes only, you know, you have 48 in the NBA game, you have 40 minutes in the Olympic team, it's harder to distribute minutes to everybody. And he's got a stacked team, right? And Devin Booker, he's one of the guys that's played every game, actually. He's played every game. There's other guys that have only played, I think Kevin Durant's only played like five or four. You know, Joel Embiid's played eight. You know, Drew Holiday, eight. But Devin Booker's one of the guys who's played all nine. I think he's one of these guys that's trying to let the game come to him. You know, he's trying to not to dictate because, you know, there's guys like LeBron and Kevin Durant, you know, Steph Curry, who are essentially the guys that are supposed to be kind of setting the example for everybody else. So I think he's kind of following suit of just kind of waiting to see when his time comes, you know. So I think that's kind of what's going on.
And I think there's a good conversation to be made for perception. You know, we look at Drew Holiday, we look at White, and they've never been discussed as the best player on their team, or they've never been like the man. They're always kind of guys that help. And so when they play that role on this team, you're like, oh, you're the super glue guy. Like you're doing exactly at a very high level what we think you should do. Devin Booker's kind of been the man, right? He's like the man in Phoenix. And so when you put him on this squad and he shrink, I don't want to say shrink, that's a bad word, but where he defers to the other athletes on the squad.
He defers.
You look at him and you're going, where's Devin Booker? Where's that Devin Booker? You know?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. What I was going to say is that support what you're saying about Devin Booker being the man at Phoenix, I mean, he's definitely was the man until Kevin Durant came. And then he kind of played second fiddle to Kevin Durant a little bit. And I think now because he's kind of surrounded by more than just Kevin Durant, he's surrounded by LeBron James, Stephen Curry, right? Anthony Davis. I mean, all of these, Drew Holiday. I mean, all those guys that I just mentioned are probably going to be future Hall of Famers, right? So, and Devin Booker is not there yet. And that's probably why he's kind of deferring, is because he probably feels like as good as a player as he is, he needs to defer to the elder statesman on this team.
Yeah. No, that's a fair point. And again, you're probably right. The next one is probably going to be a shocker, seeing that I'm a Warriors fan.
Steph Curry.
Yeah, Steph Curry's been, and you know, I've been, you know, as a lifelong Warrior fan, as you know, someone who's watched Curry a lot, I've been trying to analyze what's going on with him. Like, why, you know, and the one thing that keeps coming to mind is Curry needs a lot of touches to shine. He just does. He, you know, I don't consider him ball dominant, but he needs to be interwoven into the offense for you to kind of fully appreciate his talent. Yeah. And what's happening here is he's running a lot to the corner. They're not really passing him the ball. He's just pulling one guy out of the mix, kind of making it 4-on-4. So he's really just kind of not done a whole lot. And when he gets the ball, you know, I think he doesn't have enough repetitions. He's not in a rhythm. It's just kind of off. You know, I don't think he's a lesser player or anything. I just think it's very hard for him to kind of fit when he's not one of the prime focuses on the offense.
And to be fair, this is his first Olympics at age 36, you know, very first one. So he recognizes he's struggling. I think he's trying to do a lot of other things to help the team win. It's pretty evident that, you know, Kerr recognizes his prowess as both an on-ball shooter as well as off-the-ball shooter, and he's just using him to move the defense around. You can see that, man. The other teams respect his prowess. Even though he's struggling, they're following him closely no matter where he goes, opening up things for everybody else, right? Yeah. So the time's going to come where he's going to show up, like we all know. Everybody knows it. It's coming. It's just a matter of when. There's only two more games, right? It's got to come soon, right?
Yeah.
But we don't know why he's struggling, but I'll tell you, if Steve Kerr wasn't the coach, he'd probably be on the bench, honestly.
I would agree. I mean, well, it's hard to say because Curry's such a name, so it's hard to say that, but I think that if we're looking at this objectively, Curry should be on the bench. Like he should be on the bench. So the next guy is Joel Embiid. I think wrong guy, wrong team is just what I can say about Joel Embiid. He's a massive human being. He's very dominant, but this Kerr has implemented his kind of motion offense. It's constantly moving, and he's always a step behind. I mean, just he's always kind of slow on the offense. He's always kind of bringing it up more methodically. You know, this offense just doesn't fit him.
The argument can be made, Tuan, is that, you know, Steve Kerr has never really had a big man like a Joel Embiid, and maybe hasn't figured out how to integrate somebody like that into that motion offense because he's never really had that in the whole time he's been a coach for the Warriors. The Warriors have never had somebody who could score it down low consistently. And that's the type of player that Joel Embiid is sometimes. And I say sometimes because he tends to be more outside focused. Like, he likes to shoot outside. We all know the crap that Shaq gives him for being, you know, kind of the type of guy of being so dominant, who could be so dominant down low, taking it outside, doing threes all the time. Correct. You know, he feels like he's kind of taking the easy way out. But, you know, there's an argument to be made that it's possibly Kerr that hasn't figured out how to use somebody like him.
Yeah, that's fair. But I'm you know, you and I, Eddie, watch basketball a long time, and I'm not going to claim that I know everything about basketball, but it's hard to envision how to incorporate someone who is – when your offense is all about movement, and his movement is significantly slower than everybody else's. It's just hard. And so unless he's going to run the point where he's the distributor, right, and becomes more of a three guy where his slowness, but it's just hard. I see what you're saying. Like, you got to get creative, but then it feels like if you fit Embiid into the offense, now you're going to impact a lot of the other guys who are used to movement and now have to slow down. Because now we're playing isolation ball, which
that's kind of what happens. That's been happening a little bit in the first early games with Team USA. You kind of see them kind of get bogged down a little bit offensively because they're trying to integrate Joel Embiid to get his touches. I mean,
whole offense is different when he's in.
Totally, man. And the thing is, because he needs the ball in order to be effective, right? And, I mean, he does. He's great defensively. He's great defensively, though.
He is, absolutely. But, and you know, and he actually brings to light kind of an aha moment for me, which is, hey, I'm kind of understanding why Kawhi's not on this team. Because Kawhi, to a lot of degree, is the same way. You know, he kind of isolates the ball, looks for his opportunities, holds the ball quite a bit. Like, Harden would be horrible at this on this team. Not that he's a horrible player.
I hear you. But,
you know, like, you could put
Harden. He's not a motion offense guy.
Exactly. Like, you could put Harden and Kawhi and Embiid on a team and then maybe figure out a whole different offense. But the guys that they have, you guys got horses, you guys can move, you guys can run. So Embiid, you know, I don't think it's his fault. I just think that the offense is just something that is a different animal than what he's acclimated to, and it just moves in a different way. Which, by the way, is going to be curious, you know, when out with Paul George and kind of figuring that out, how they do over in Philadelphia with, you know, kind of that aspect. Although Paul George is more an ISO guy as well.
Yeah.
Yep.
He's an upgrade to Tobias Harris, though. So and they were already a good team with Tobias Harris, and now they have Paul George, and they're going to be a better team. It's just a matter of the emergence of Tyrese Maxey, really, was going to separate that team.
But the benefit of Tobias Harris is he wasn't a guy that demanded the ball or you had to – like, he was a guy that could be more in the background. Paul George is going to be more in the forefront.
Yeah.
And you have to run your offense more through Paul George than you ever would have through Tobias Harris. And then the last guy who even on his own team sometimes blends in the background is Jason Tatum. He's just there. You know, he looks for his opportunities. He's kind of a weight kind of guy. So, and again, I don't want to say these are guys that are bad. They're just guys that are just kind of there figuring out what to do, you know. And so Jason Tatum, but again, he does that sometimes on his own squad, you know, with Jaylen Brown kind of playing
He has really good games and then really mediocre games. Mediocre games. He's kind of like Anthony Davis to some point, although Anthony Davis has shown more consistently here than he does for the LA Lakers in the regular season, right? He's been consistent here off the bench.
But then again, they're playing every 2 days or so as well.
Yeah, that's true too. But you know, that begs the question, man. I mean, you got Joel Embiid, who has been struggling a little bit in this offense, whereas Anthony Davis is thriving. Yet Anthony Davis, I think, has only started one game. And it's curious to see why, you know, Steve Kerr is deciding to do that when, you know, in my opinion, I think Anthony Davis has been the best player so far of this tournament for Team USA. You know, and you wonder why he's doing that. It's possible because he sees, you know, this second team being as dominant as they are with Anthony Edwards, you know, Kevin Durant, freaking Anthony Davis, right? I mean, those three right there, you know, Derek White, I mean, all those guys are just killing it right now against any other team's second team. They're gonna kill these guys, right? So maybe he sees matchup nightmares more with Anthony Davis coming off the bench versus the team's, you know, team the other team's bench players. So that's possible.
Yeah, and also, I'm kind of liking the whole 5 for 5, right? So the first five,
the hockey substitution,
the massive substitutions, because that does to some degree allow the first team to play a little bit of a different offense with Joel Embiid in there. And then when Anthony Davis's squad comes out, then run. Everyone run, you know, run Forrest.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Run, Forrest, run.
Exactly. And so again, Embiid, I think, you know, obviously we're nitpicking here. I mean, they beat Puerto Rico by, you know, like 30. They beat Brazil by like 40 or something. I mean, it was just they're running away with it. But looking at them as they play as a unit, that was my assessment. That's what I was seeing with my eyes. I know that down the road here, we're going to show some metrics.
That's probably a good segue here, man.
Because
I kind of interjected my perspectives as you were talking about it. You know, I don't want to kind of make it like you talk first and I talk second. You know, it's not like that, right? We just want to make this a conversation like we normally do when we get together anyway, right? So, but let's go ahead and do a segue into the statistical breakdown of Team USA. Now, for those of you who have watched our episodes for Summer League, you see that we kind of go through this process of kind of going through the eye test, which is kind of what we covered here for Team USA. And then we go through the statistical breakdown kind of from a fantasy standpoint, because, you know, let's face it, some of you out there play fantasy basketball, right? Or maybe even, you know, daily fantasy leagues, right? You pay attention to stats to see how well a player does, both from an offensive and defensive standpoint. You kind of see how efficient the player is when on the court based on the minutes they play and how many stats they accumulate during that time. So we have here doing the same thing with the Team USA. So I'm going to go through the first game here. And what I want the audience to see here is I'm going to go through each game, 9 games. I'm not going to delve too much into it, but I want to kind of lay out what you're looking at here. Right. So let me go ahead and take care of that banner. There's a banner there, right, Tuan?
Yep. Yeah, let me hear. I'll do it.
Okay. You got it?
Yeah, I got it. Go ahead. You're good.
Okay. So anyway, what you see here is you're going to see everybody, the ranking is from points accumulated. Again, these are points. The point system is points is points. Rebounds are 1.2 points. Assists are 1.5 points. Blocks and steals are 3 points each. Turnovers are -1 points. When you add all the stats together, and I'm showing the stats for every player that played in this game for Team USA, I rank them from the best, the highest, to the lowest. And the ones that are bolded are the starters. So you know what you're looking at right now, right? So you will see, as we pointed out already, Anthony Davis, you pointed him out as one of the most impressive guys that you've seen so far. And the stats are not lying here, man.
Yeah.
I mean, look at that. 43.2 points and did that in 19 minutes, man. I mean,
that's crazy. Look at that,
points per minute. It's 2.27. So it begs the question, you know, why is he not starting? There's probably a reason. Hey, they're winning, right? Let's not go ahead and just, you know, peel the onion too much. But they're winning. But, I mean, they need more of this guy on the floor, man, if they want to really take it out. But, they, you know, he wants to balance the team and, you know, spread the minutes. I get it. Okay, the second guy here, Tyrese Halliburton, he hasn't really played much since this game. This is his best output, right? It's interesting that he had the second best statistical game in game one against Team USA, against Canada, and they won. And then you see Tyrese Halliburton being the second best, followed by Jrue Holiday, LeBron James, you know, all the way down to the worst being Joel Embiid. Interesting, right?
Yeah.
You can see out of the starters, Devin Booker and Joel Embiid were near the bottom after the first game. Bam Adebayo being one of the bottom ones as far as the players coming off the bench. All right. Then we go to the second game against Australia. Who's at the top again? Anthony Davis. And again, the guys that are bolded are the team or the players that are starters. And you can see that they made a change here. They started Jason Tatum now and Anthony Edwards. The main constants have been Joel Embiid, LeBron James, and Stephen Curry, all through the first exhibition games. But you can see Anthony Davis being the best guy. And then all of a sudden here, Anthony Edwards being the guy that we all talked about, he can be 26.8 points, right? But you can see the points per minute that Anthony Davis put up. First game, he put 2.27. Second game, he puts 2.29. It's incredible.
Better.
And then, yeah, and it's pretty
less,
consistent.
And Eddie, in less minutes.
In 18 minutes, right, right.
Yeah, and one minute. Okay,
yeah. And then you see Joel Embiid, right? He moved up. He was near the bottom. Now he's the fourth best. Jason Tatum, he started getting more, you know, he started after he didn't really play that much in that first game. Then he got 17.3 points. So, you know, you can see that the point distribution is pretty balanced after the top three. You know, but Anthony Davis is dominating. Let's go to the game number three. Who's at the top again? Anthony Davis. That's three games in a row being the best. And look at his points per minute, 1.95 minutes. And he had only 16 minutes, right?
Yep, he keeps losing minutes.
You know, it's crazy. It's crazy. Like, you know, you know that the coaching staff is doing similar things. They have probably have their own system to figure out how efficient a player is, right?
Correct.
Because we all know that we're in this system of just analytics, right? Analytics is dominating sports right now. And there's a reason why it's dominating, because it actually proves out that, you know, some of these things really play out like they should, like you anticipate. Yeah. So you can see here at the very bottom is Devin Booker. He didn't start. Derek White, this is his first game. He got integrated. And look, no one to be seen here is Kevin Durant, because he didn't play until, I think, game five or six. So let's keep going. Game four against South Sudan. This was the hardest game that the Team USA team had to deal with in the exhibition games.
I believe they won by 1 point, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. Say that again, Twan.
I believe they won by 1 point.
Yeah, they barely won.
1-100. They barely squeezed it.
Barely won. And look at the two LA Lakers carried the team. Anthony Davis being number one, LeBron James being number two, right? And then from there, it just kind of tapered off. Tyrese Halliburton, you're starting to see his minutes kind of go completely diminished. Derek White gets integrated. But the worst out of the starters was Devin Booker. And he was like that as well. Well, he actually was at the bottom in game three against Serbia. And then game four against Sudan, he's at number eight, right? So keep going. Let's go to the against Germany. Oh, now we see Joel Embiid be integrated, right? And Joel Embiid was the top point getter at 37.1 points, total fantasy points. LeBron James being number two. Look at Anthony Davis, 14 minutes, man, 25.4 points. Look at that points per minute. Still one of the best on the team. But then you see Jrue Holiday. Jrue Holiday led 12 minutes. Look at that stat line, man, in 12 minutes. That's uber efficient, man. That's crazy how that is, right? And then, you know, you see Stephen Curry, you know, being one of the lower guys in starting five, being efficient, you know, but that's one of his better games at 22.6. And again, Devin Booker near the bottom, right? Let's go to game six against this is Serbia. This is group play. Now this is the first game in the Olympics. This is when LeBron James really started showing up once the group play started. you see 39.9 points as being the top one. And then you see Joel Embiid all the way down near the bottom, and Stephen Curry always being kind of like your second to last as far as the starters go. Again, bolded are the starters. The non-bolded are the bench players. And then you see Kevin Durant. This is when he first came back. His first game was in game, the first game in group play against Serbia. And he was the fourth best player in 17 minutes, scored 24.2 points. So you can see, man, it's interesting, these statistics, how they kind of shows kind of supporting what you're talking about some of the players that really stood out. What's interesting, yep. You point out Derek White, right? Derek White is just doing all the dirty work. Look at, he's always near the bottom, right? Always near the bottom, but he's doing all the stuff that really stands out from an eye test standpoint to win games, right? So this process that we're going through from a statistics standpoint doesn't necessarily only paint the picture, right? Because Derek White has been standing out. Drew Holiday has been standing out, right, from a defensive standpoint. All right, then we go to South Sudan, the second game against South Sudan. Yeah. And this Anthony Davis, again, he's near the top, but Bam Adebayo, as a bench player, scored the most points, 34.9 points, gave him the best 1.66 points per minute out of all the players. And then you can see Kevin Durant being integrated. He's the third best. He's another bench player. But you can see right here, out of the top five players, three of them, We're coming off the bench. And in my opinion, Tom, the bench has definitely solidified this team. This is the reason why they're winning, man, is because of the bench, in my opinion. So we'll keep going. And by the way, if you have any questions, or just interject, right? Whenever you need. Yeah. So, all right. So then we only have two more to cover, and I'm going to go through the entire summary for all games here. All right. So then we have against Puerto Rico. Now, they killed this team. Poor Puerto Rico, man. I mean, they really didn't have a chance, right? But, you know, Anthony Edwards, this is his coming out party. This is when he really, really showed up. This was his coming out party. As you can see, 2.24 points. That's Anthony Davis territory right there, right? I mean, for a guard to be doing that, I mean, that's a stat line right there in 17 minutes. Look at that stat line in 17 minutes, man. That's crazy.
I said he was feeling himself in this game.
Oh, yeah. That's when you start seeing the cockiness come on. I like it, man. I don't mind it. But look at you mentioned this out, man. Stephen Curry near the bottom again, right?
Yep.
And then you got Devin Booker near the bottom again. Derek White still near the bottom, but he's making impact plays. And then, you know, you see that Drew Holiday, this is one of the games that he actually took off. He didn't get to play here. So, Drew Holiday not there, you got Tyrese Halliburton still not there.
What's interesting, in my opinion, Stephen Curry is completely being used to isolate a defender or more than one defender, because even he's not bringing up the ball hardly ever. He's not initiating he's very rarely initiating the offense. When LeBron James is there, he's doing it, I would say, 50 to 60% of the time, and then the other 40% is being done by a bevy of players. Drew Holiday, you know, Bam Adebayo, like there's just different people. So Steph Curry, I mean, they're not using him for anything other than to draw the defense.
That's exactly what he's doing. He's the decoy right now. He's opening up the floor for everybody else. And that's his value right now to the team. They know that he can shoot. Everybody knows he can shoot. And maybe is it that the way that they're playing on defense, you know, double teaming him, making it hard for him to kind of get around screens, you know, maybe that's just kind of wearing him out a little bit, right? This is his first Olympics. He hasn't really experienced the spurts that, you know, players play in less minutes, you know, and Curry's one of these guys who, you know, dominates, you know, on the Warriors a lot of the ball, right? He's always carrying up the ball. And maybe, Twan, we might be getting a sneak peek here, man, as how he's going to be utilized moving forward, man, right? He may no longer be the number one guy. He might have to be the number two guy for the Warriors to be successful. And maybe this is kind of a sneak peek as what's to come for the upcoming season for the Warriors. All right, so then the last game, this is the game that just happened yesterday against Brazil. So now we're in the single elimination, and guess who's at the top again? Mr. Anthony Davis, LeBron James being number two. I mean, these Laker guys, they're playing well, man. I mean, you can see why, you know, a lot of people were kind of disappointed in the Lakers not going further than they should have, because they had a pretty stacked team more than the year before that, even when they were the champions in 2020, you know, and they haven't really gone that far. Therefore, they're changing the coach, right? So we shall see, you know.
Eddie, I mean, obviously, we have to, no one's ever really questioned their talent level. But the fact that they're doing so well is because, you know, at least Anthony Davis, we could argue, is the most talented player on this team. But when he plays with the Lakers, they double team him. They do things that this these teams can't do. Anthony right. Davis, for the most part, is one-on-one. You know, who are you going to pull off of? You know, whoever you pull off of, he's going to get the ball to, and then they're going to score. So that's another reason that they're doing so well is because – but when they go back to the Lakers, you know, their perimeter shooting has been questionable for a while now.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. That is true.
They can solely focus on their interior game.
Yeah, that's a good observation. You're right, Juan. That's a good observation, yeah, because they don't have the shooters that on the Lakers like they do on Team USA. You know, you have Devin Booker. You have, you know, Kevin Durant. You have Stephen Curry, even though he has not really showed up yet.
But and Derek White, when Derek White goes, he doesn't take them off him, but when he shoots them, they go in.
Yeah. You know? He does. You're right.
Yeah.
So anyway, I broke down every game, right? So this is the cumulative of all the games, all right? So of all the games played, you know, I kind of put next to each of the players, you know, how many games they played. And you can see Anthony Davis was the number one guy at 293.1 points. And you can see the points per game, the parentheses next to it, that means where they're ranked as far as points per game. So Anthony Davis is number one. LeBron James being number two at total points as well as points per game. And then Anthony Edwards being, again, the third in points per game. The fourth guy is where it deviates. This is where you start seeing, okay, he had 172.2 points, Bam Adebayo in nine games. That gives him a 19.1 points per game. That's seven. So that's, you know, even had the most points, he's 7th points per game. But it's the total games, nine games, that's why he caught up a lot of points because he had more games than other players. But you can see Kevin Durant, right? Being the fourth guy, he only played in four games, but scored 96.7 points, being the 10th best out of all the players that have played in Team USA. And then you can see at the very, very bottom, Tyrese Halliburton. He only had that one game where he scored 30 points in that one game, and then six games after that, he scored 30 points total. That's five points per game, right? I mean, unfortunately, he's just kind of thinking, you know, he's just, you know, has to kind of swallow his pride a little bit. There's other players that are better than him on this team. And he, you know, he's going to be in future Olympic games. So that's kind of, you know, he just has to deal with it, man. Any observations?
Real quick, that third column is being blocked by our
grumpy. Oh,
what's that third column's header say?
Oh, yes. Thank you, man. It's points per game.
And then what's Anthony Davis's points?
32.6 points. Okay. So he was number one. And then the second guy is LeBron James at 28.6 points per game. He's at number two. Correct. So, yeah. Oh, you can see that. Okay. So anyway, so that's pretty much, you know, the breakdown of all of the statistical breakdown of each player of Team USA through all nine games. And we're going to see what happens. I'll accumulate the last two games as part of this for, you know, when we have the next podcast, just as a kind of a, to kind of finish up this whole conversation of Team USA. Hopefully it'll be bold by Saturday, right? But, you know, but what I wanted, the next thing I wanted to kind of talk about, Tuan, is this team, man. Okay, there's been a lot of comparisons about this being like probably a deeper team than the original dream team of Team USA. And I kind of found that a little laughable, honestly, man. Yeah. And, I can understand why there's that conversation. But man, there is no way. And what I wanted to show here, man, is a side-by-side comparison of the players. Okay. So you can see here, what I tried to do here is show, okay, you have the original dream team. I started out with Christian Laettner. He was the only player from college on this team. And at that time, they always had some kind of college player go with, you know, the original, the professional teams.
Before that, it was all college players, right?
Before that, it was all college players. But when they started this dream team, they kept some of that old legacy of having, you know, the best of the college player be on that dream team, right? So Christian Laettner was the only one here. But if you look at everybody else after that, David Robinson, Patrick Ewing, Larry Bird, Scottie Pippen, Michael Jordan, Clyde Drexler, all the way down to Magic Johnson, man, this is the who's who of the Hall of Fame, man. I mean, it's kind of ludicrous that you want to compare, you know, this team, you know, the current team to the dream team, in my opinion, right? But you can see.
Good. The one thing I do want to note here is I saw a statistic, and I don't know if I'm capturing this right, so someone can course correct me here in the comments if I'm not. But the 2024 Olympic team is facing 27 NBA players.
27 NBA players in the entire Olympics, you mean?
Correct. So the
78 total. There's 78 total.
Correct, but I guess what they're against the teams that they're playing 27 NBA players, like NBA caliber or NBA players that are in the league, while the Dream Team didn't face any.
Oh, I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying. Yeah, but the number's bigger than 27. The point I was trying to make that, you know, I think there's a total of 78 players from the NBA that are in this Olympics right now. But okay. Yeah, your point is well taken.
So that only reinforces my point even more, right?
Yeah. Like
the competition that these guys are facing, would argue, is it's very different. Much tougher than the conversation. And again, if we want to compare, like Larry Bird, by the time the Dream Team came, he was pretty much done.
He was hurting, man.
He was done. You know, correct. Leighton didn't even play. Wasn't Magic Johnson after his HIV announcement?
Yes. Yes.
So Magic Johnson was clearly kind of past his prime. So there's some conversations that can be made. But in terms of name recognition, I'm not going to argue with you. But I think that, I think we can go down and kind of start to kind of hammer out one versus the other. Like Bam Adebayo is obviously better than Christian Leighton.
Yeah, right? And before, by the way, before you even get there, what I try to do is trying to line it up, right, to the like player, right? That's what I tried to do, but it kind of got lost after Karl Malone, right? Because this team is a lot bigger, right? You got Karl Malone, Chris Mullin, Charles Barkley, Magic Johnson. I mean, they're all way bigger than the guys near the bottom. So go ahead. I just wanted to kind of lay that out.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is as we're looking at this list, you know, I mean, there's clear winners on one side, there's clear winners on the other side, and then there's kind of this mumbo jumbo. But again, to your point, obviously the reason the column on the right is smaller is because it's a different type of basketball now than the time when the column on the left was playing. When the column on the left, the original Dream Team, it was all big. There was very minimal 3-point.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. You're seeing the transgression or the transformation of the game, right? It became smaller. Small ball kind of dominated later in the years, whereas early years, you know, 90s, 80s, 70s, 80s, 90s, it was all big man dominant, right? Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, so. And you go down the 2024 Olympic team, and any of those guys, let me do just a quick check. Any of those guys will shoot a 3-pointer on you.
On the 2024 team,
And you go down the right, the left side, the Dream Team, dude, David Robinson ain't shooting no 3-pointer. Patrick Ewing ain't shooting a 3-pointer. Karl Malone ain't shooting anything, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
it's essentially Chris Mullin, John Stockton, Larry Bird, and an occasional Michael Jordan, and an occasional Charles Barkley, and an occasional Magic Johnson.
Correct.
Yeah. Correct.
So I would agree with you that if we played in the Dream Team's time, I think they would own the team on the – they would own the 2024 team. But if we played under current rules, I'm thinking that the 2024 team is probably going to run away with it.
It depends, man. It depends. So it really comes down to defensively. Like if you look at the team, the original Dream Team.
Correct.
Okay,
correct.
Who here was dominant defensively? Honestly, it's probably maybe – three or four of them that were dominant. You have Michael Jordan, you have Scottie Pippen, you have Patrick Ewing when he wanted to, and David Robinson after that. John Stockton.
But I want to be clear.
Yeah.
David Robinson and Patrick Ewing, their defensive.
Yeah, it's down low. It's not like.
Well, it's not only down low, it's at blocking shots, solely at blocking shots, right? If you're talking true defenders, it's Jordan and Pippen, and that's it.
No, John Stockton was a good defender for his size.
Okay, sure. Okay, you're right. So John Stockton. So there's three. I mean, Molly would try to pick your pocket, but you were by him in a heartbeat.
Yeah, you know? He wasn't the best man in the world. You're right. Yeah.
And then you look at the defenders on the left for the 2024 team. You know, Anthony Edwards is a very good defender. Derek White is a very good defender, right? Yep. Drew Holiday is a very good defender. Anthony Davis is a very good defender. Not only a good defender, but he can guard the perimeter.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm saying let's just imagine this, right? Forget everybody else, but you got Anthony Davis and David Robinson out in the perimeter. What the hell is David Robinson going to do?
I mean, but you know what? David Robinson, I mean, he's pretty agile, man. I would probably say that's maybe harder for
him. You don't think Anthony Davis gets around him?
Well, he could, but David Robinson's pretty agile. I mean, he would he could make it hard for some of those other players, maybe besides, you know, Anthony Edwards. So it looks like we got another.
All right. Someone's going to blast me.
We got another question here. All right. Back to the Stone Age. Right on, man.
There he is.
Come back. Yo, Phil X, you're the most manly of luchadores. None of today's cream puffs would be able to stand up to the original Dream Team. Those guys were men.
So Stone Age, luchador, you're showing your age. You're clearly at least in your 50s. So you're showing your age, luchador. You know, it depends on how you define cream puffs. But, you know, yes, the original Dream Team, you know, like Barkley, you're not messing with Barkley. You know, just you're not. You know, you're not messing with Jordan. You know, you're not messing with Ewing. You're not messing with Bird. I mean, you're just not. They'll punch you right before it's all said and done. And the players on the right aren't really like that. But the players on the right have perimeter shooting, and their bigger players have significantly more speed than the bigger players on the original Dream Team. And I think that if you play in today's game, that those two statistics would lean it towards the 2024 Olympic team. But if they played in 19, you know, what year was this Dream Team?
1992.
Yeah, if you played basketball in 1992, the Dream Team would beat the crud out of the 2024 Olympic team.
Under the rules. Yeah, you're talking about the rules dictate like how the result would play out, right? That's what you're saying, you know. Right. And you know, and they're faster, more agile right now, right? But you know, it's an interesting argument, man. But let me kind of take it to a different conversation here, man. So the original premise that I had here is Christian Laettner being the only guy that from college on this team, right? But you look at, I mean, Christian Laettner was a decent NBA player. He wasn't like where he was projected to be, because he's actually considered one of the best college basketball players of all time out of Duke. I mean, he had a hell of a college career, man. But yet it didn't really translate very well into the NBA. It's kind of like the way Don McLean, remember at UCLA, actually considered one of the best scoring players at that time out of UCLA. I think he might've had the scoring record at UCLA, surpassed the, Abdul-Jabbar, but I think Abdul-Jabbar didn't play as many years. So, but Don McLean, same thing. He came to the NBA, didn't really play well. So Christian Laettner's from that mold. But Christian Laettner at the time was like a beast of a college player. Again, didn't translate. But if you look at everybody else on the original Dream Team, Hall of Famers, right? All of them, right? So if we go to the right, and let's go ahead and figure out who do you think is Hall of Fame, you know, who do you think is going to make it into the Hall of Fame? So, I mean, do you think Bam Adebayo is on the trajectory to be a Hall of Famer?
I think he's borderline.
Okay, I would say the same thing. He needs a championship to be there, in my opinion. Right now, all these guys, you know, on the left, David Robinson, championship. Patrick Ewing, no. Larry Bird, yes. Scottie Pippen, yes. Michael Jordan, yes. Clyde Drexler, yes. Karl Malone, no. Stockton, no. Mullen, no. Charles Barkley, no. Magic Johnson, yes. As far as championships, so we're you know, championships matter in a team's legacy. That's another podcast we had in the previous one. If you want to look at that conversation. But anyway, so Bam Adebayo is questionable. Anthony Davis,
yes,
I agree, he is. Yes. Joel Embiid,
yes,
I think he's on the he's an MVP. I think he needs a championship to solidify it, but I think he wouldn't be first ballot unless he wins for a championship. All right, LeBron James, no-brainer, right? No-brainer. All right, Anthony Edwards on the trajectory.
You missed Tatum.
Oh, sorry, Tatum. Yeah, Tatum.
So my answer for Tatum would be I would say no, but I think he will be. He's a Celtic. He won a championship. I think he will be. But I'm of the belief right now that I have not seen enough of his talent set to say he's a Hall of Famer.
He's on the trajectory to be on the Hall of Fame, in my opinion. I mean, the guy has still got a lot of basketball. He's still young, man, right? He's the highest paid player in the NBA now. And he's uber talented. And, you know, the knock on him, we've had podcast conversations about this, is that he lacks the killer instinct, right? And I don't think you can, you either have it or you don't, but I think you can get better at it, right? And maybe he can get better at it. I mean, maybe the hunger, maybe to win more is there. He has one already in his back pocket. Let's see if this drives him to have that instinct to win more. We'll find out. But I say yes, he is. Anthony Edwards on the trajectory.
It's on the trajectory. It's early to tell, but yes, on the trajectory.
He definitely has the talent to be one of those guys that we talked about earlier. As long as he puts the work and doesn't get complacent because he's uber talented, as long as he puts the work, I think he's on the trajectory. But in my opinion, he needs to win he needs to win an NBA championship. So, correct. All right, Devin Booker.
I'm going to say borderline.
I'm going to say no. All right. Derek White.
No.
Yeah, I don't say no yet, but if he wins another one, he could be kind of in the Draymond Green conversation, right? Because Draymond Green has got four championships. And a lot of people say, is he kind of is he borderline? Is he a shoo-in for all of them?
Let me ask you this. Is Derek White good at anything as good as Draymond is at defense?
No.
So that's why I say no.
Yeah, so but Derek White for his
size. I like him. You know how much I like him, but I'm supposed to say no.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. All right. So, what about Jrue Holiday?
Borderline.
I would say that he is. He brought a championship to two separate teams, right? And he was a difference maker for both of those teams. I say yes. I think he's going to be a Hall of Famer and considered one of the best defensive players at the perimeter of all time. All right, Tyrese Halliburton.
Right now, I'd say no.
I would say the same thing. And then with the last two, Kevin Durant, Stephen Curry.
Yeah.
Shoo-ins. Yeah. Shoo-ins. Right. Yep. So if you use that argument, I mean, you know, granted, when we were watching the Dream Team, we didn't know if Scottie Pippen was going to be a Hall of Famer at that time. We might have been a borderline guy. You know, Karl Malone, even though he's a top scoring guy, we didn't know. Chris Mullin, we didn't know, right? Correct. So it could be the same kind of argument here. We knew the shoo-ins. You know, David Robinson, Larry Bird, Patrick Ewing was kind of questionable at the time. Michael Jordan, you know, Magic Johnson. Charles Barkley, I mean, for those of you who had not watched Charles Barkley, that dude was dominant, man.
Monster. Monster.
Monster. He was so freaking good, man. And I hated going up against him as, you know, for our Warriors playing him because he just.
Yeah, he would destroy him. Anyway,
but so the same kind of argument. We went through this list, and I'm sure at that time when you were kind of going through this list, we'd have the same kind of, borderline. Yeah, maybe, yep. yeah, no. You know, so it's kind of the same thing, right? But it's
interesting. Like, I wouldn't have put Ewing in the Hall of Fame. Like, if you're asking me kind of just. Overall, I'd be like, no. I'd be like, no, you know?
Yeah.
So I have a question for you. Are you done with that piece? Because I have something that occurred.
Yeah. I'm done with it, man. I'm done with it.
I want to ask you a question. Put that list back up real quick.
Oh, okay.
Because I want to pick your brain at something.
All right.
Okay. Hear me out. When you look at both of these teams, okay. Yeah. Who's the better team? But let me finish.
Right.
Who's the better team in terms of talent distribution and who does what in terms of a real team? Like, never mind.
I know you're getting at.
Never mind the name recognition. Screw the name recognition.
You're saying the way the team was architected. Yeah. You're saying the way the team was architected.
Correct.
That's what you're coming down to, right?
Who's the better team?
Yeah. So there's definitely more balance on the 2024 Olympic team because there are specialists that are needed for a team to win. I mean, Steve Kerr said it very well recently in an interview. You know, you just can't have a bunch of like ball dominant scoring all in the same lineup at the same time because it's just not going to work. You know, you just can't, the team can't function like it should, right? Yep. You need these other kind of role players that, you know, do something very good from either a defensive standpoint, rebounding standpoint, passing standpoint, screen standpoint, right? If you have a bunch of guys, you can argue the Dream Team was kind of more like that, right? They're a little bit more bunch of ball-dominant guys, maybe besides a John Stockton, right, and Magic Johnson. But everybody else, you know, needed the ball in their hands to be really, really good, right? Maybe Scottie Pippen's the other one. He's a specialist in my being the defensive guy. But everybody else, you can argue that they needed the ball. Right. Yep. Whereas the guys on the Olympic team right now, you know, not everybody needs the ball. So it's a good conversation that you started that maybe the 2024 team Olympic team is better architected than the original Dream Team.
Yes.
I still think the original Dream Team, just because of, man, those players are freaking all Hall of Famers, man. You know,
I hear you, Eddie, but to me, if I look at these both teams and I look at the original Dream Team, they're the more dominant team. Like, every player is a name player. They're dominant. They can do. But the biggest question I have, and if you remember, one of their first practices, they went up against a bunch of college players, a bunch of kind of big name college players, and they lost.
Yeah.
One of their first practices, those college players beat them. And then they came back, got their act together, and kind of went on. But what I remember when I'm watching the Dream Team play team after team after team, I remember thinking, this is like an all-star game. Like, you know, where they're just going straight to the lane and dunking on people and just destroying people. But when I watched the 2024, they look like a team. Like,
yeah,
like,
you're right. You're right.
Team play.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I know what you're getting at, man. It's an argument to be made. I mean, you know, hopefully this starts a conversation, you know, in the comments section once this podcast re-airs tomorrow, right? But my cousin, Jose, man, Lewis, hey, Jose. Thanks for listening in, Lewis, my elder statesman and my cousin. An awesome topic today, gentlemen. Right on. Appreciate it. Thanks for listening, Jose. Appreciate it. I don't call him Jose. It's Lewis.
He's much better looking than you, by the way.
Eddie, oh, so. Man. Come on, man. Come on, man.
So my question with the original Dream Team is, how do they play once they can't be as dominant as they're acclimated to? Actually have to be a team.
Yeah, and the thing is that it begs the question. If that original Dream Team played against the same amount of competition that this current team is playing in the Olympics, would they have been that dominant? Yeah. I would say probably not, but they'd still win the gold.
Yeah. Right?
I mean,
they're Hall of Famers. Yeah.
Yeah. They're all, their talent alone would win them games. And I would say the same argument applies here with this current Olympic team, is that the talent alone is going to win them games. Their bench players, they're five players off the bench. We'd probably win the gold, honestly, if they had just the scrubs coming off the bench.
There's no way in hell that a team ran by Magic, Larry, and Jordan would let a team lose, would let their team. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah, right.
You know, they'll kick and scream and whatever they need to do, brother. Where did I get?
All right, so let me ask you this. You brought up that Magic, Michael. All right, who has that kind of like, hey, man, we're not going to lose here, man.
On the Warriors? I mean,
on this Olympic team, man. Who is like that?
Anthony Edwards.
Probably the only one, but I think he does it the same.
Yep, and he's so young that right now that influence isn't big enough.
Yeah.
Like, I think he'll become more that as his career goes on and in a couple of years. But, yeah, I look at after that, and again, you know, somebody was saying cream puffs or something. You know, earlier there was a comment, and
that was back to the Stone Age. Phil X, baby.
You look at them, and I don't see anybody standing up to Barkley. I don't see anybody, you know, standing up to Ewing when he's in. I don't see anybody standing up to Jordan when he's in their face. You know, they're just, most of them are going to be like, come on, man, move it on.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I agree, man. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah.
I agree, man.
Yeah.
Well, hey, Twan, man, this was a great topic, man. I mean, you know,
I like
We discussed Team USA solely on this whole hour. Actually, we did it in an hour and 3 minutes and counting, but we're not going way over, nor are we going way under here, man. So we covered Team USA, all the games from an eye test standpoint, as well as a statistical standpoint. I broke down every game, gave you the top 10 from each game, as far as, you know, who scored the most fantasy points and points per minute, and then the cumulative effect of all that. And then we had a conversation about the Dream Team, the original Dream Team, versus this current team, who's better and why. And I think that was a great topic of conversation, man. And hopefully, like I said, more comments will come in. But
I'll tell you what, Eddie, if there's a heaven,
yeah,
this is the kind of questions I want answered when I'm there. I want to watch this game. Everyone in their prime,
go at it, man.
I really want to see that.
I hear you, man. So, all right. Well, hey, we're going to go ahead and sign off here. This is Buzzer Beaters. Again, this is a gremlingsmedia.com property, Buzzer Beaters. You can find us on Pandora, YouTube, X, Facebook, pretty much any outlet that you have for podcasts. You can find Buzzer Beaters. Just remember to call out Gremlings Media call name anytime you go into YouTube or X or Rumble. So anyway, thanks to the audience for listening, and thanks for the questions. We're going to come back here again, probably not in 2 weeks. Unfortunately, I have to take my daughter to college. She's going to college in 2 weeks. And, you know, this is my only kid, man. It's going to be total waterworks. We're staying there for about a week and almost 9 or 10 days. So the likelihood of us having a podcast in 2 weeks is probably pretty slim, but we're going to probably have it 2 weeks after that, which would be taking us into the first week of September. Is probably when we're going to have our next podcast, and we're going to probably talk about some of the, you know, potential trades that have happened. And we know that Lauri Markkanen didn't get traded. He re-signed with the Utah Jazz, and yep. You know, Danny Ainge, we know that guy is just uber, you know, a competitive when it comes to negotiating.
He couldn't get his 14 first round picks that he wanted.
That's what he wanted, man. And the Warriors weren't willing to do it. So, you know, bravo to Mike Dunleavy, because honestly, I didn't want Lauri Markkanen, man. I wanted some
Not for that price.
They wanted Podziemski. They wanted Podziemski, man. And I'm like, no, man. Podziemski's good. He's going to be a good player, man. So, but anyway, so we're going to talk a little bit about probably some of the more offseason things. And I had mentioned in the previous podcast, we might start talking about the WNBA. I had a friend of mine who played basketball, female basketball player, who could have played in the WNBA. She had agreed to be on there. I just have to coordinate as to when we're going to do it. And I've already kind of given the sneak peek that it'd probably be in the first week of September. So that's probably where we're going to have our next podcast. But by all means, please give us commentary, give us feedback, tell us what you'd like to hear on future podcasts. We're going to do this every 2 weeks until the start of the NBA preseason, which is going to be October, like the early October timeframe. But until then, come back here early September, and we'll have our next podcast at that point. But again, this is Buzzer Beaters. This is Eddie Aparicio, and this is my co-host, Anthony Tuan Corral, and we're going to go ahead and sign off.